This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Open for Business is powered by BossBolay.com, Malaysia's first online company secretary.
Good morning, this is Frida Liu. You're listening to Open for Business. Close to 10 years ago, husband and wife team, musician, filmmaker Pete Teo and architect Lisa Ngan bought the farm. I know it doesn't sound right, but they bought the farm. So over the years, in addition to it being an organic farm, it's turned into a community space of sorts for food and other activities. How sustainable has it been and what keeps them going? So we'll find out now. So for the umpteenth time, Pete and Lisa, you'll have to tell us the genesis of the story because the last time we spoke was 6 years ago on Feeding Time. So let us begin.
The genesis. I always like to say that we got drunk.
All best decisions are made that way.
No, the truth was that it was time to change. I think I'll leave Lisa's reason for her to answer. But for myself, it was just the time to do something different. I've done up to then. This was, we're talking about like 2013 or 14. And up to then, I'd been like, you know, in the music business or the film business, you know, in the media eye, that sort of stuff. And frankly, it got a bit stale. It got a bit dull and stale. And, you know, and the media world is kind of full of, you know.
That. Thanks a lot.
So it's quite good to sort of do something completely honest, you know. I mean, and so a farm seems like a good idea. I mean, that was really my prime motivation, just to sort of do something different. Yeah, for Lisa, it's probably similar too.
All right.
Yeah. Yes, I mean, that whole thing of doing something different. I think we were very lucky in that, you know, this came up. The history of the farm was, it was started by my parents some years ago, as a kind of hobby farm that kind of got slightly out of control, and they were kind of growing more and more and more stuff. So ended up kind of selling to shops and things like that. And then I suppose Pete and I started spending more time up here. So what I mean by we were lucky was, in a sense, we didn't have to make a big decision to kind of like, right, we're packing up and we're leaving the city and we're moving out to the sticks. It was kind of, we just started spending more and more time up here. And yes, for me as well, it was time to do something different. I'd practiced as an architect for, over 20 years, probably. I'd always really loved cooking. I mean, neither of us knew anything about farming. So when we took it over, it was always with the idea that we would eventually do a kind of something to do with food, have a kind of farm-to-table restaurant. So I've always loved cooking. I've always loved having people around. So that whole thing of feeding people, I think I've always really loved. And how we started this was very much like that. It's kind of small groups of people, 10 to 12. It's kind of like having, I suppose, like a supper club. So it's like having a group of people round to eat. That's how it started, really. And
right.
I mean, it sounds slightly hokey, but it was kind of nice to be doing, you know, growing food and feeding people. It's very basic.
Right.
You know, it's kind of fundamental and basic and sort of, honest, if that doesn't sound too kind of hokey.
It's so cute. As I'm doing the interview, I hear the dog in the background. But when you say also packing up, right, it's not that far from the city.
No,
but that's the beauty, right? It's so nearby, and yet you're like in a different world. So you guys are known as Google farmers, as in you learn how to farm through Google. So they were plans to commercialize the space. And, you know, I guess the idea is, when did you start distributing to restaurants? We'll start with that.
Well, I suppose the light bulb moment, if you like, was we were supplying, before we took it over, we were supplying to a organic shop. And the kind of light bulb moment for us was, you know, the kind of first few times we sent the veg out, and, you know, it's these big crates of veg, and it's kind of like a giant crate of gailan, and, you know, we're selling organic vegetables, so we're already getting a better price, but kind of like this giant crate, and that was like 20 ringgit or whatever. And it's, you know, well, that's not going to work. And also, you know, we're a small farm. We're never going to be able to compete with larger farms, you know, for that kind of, that sort of, if you like, everyday veg that you can kind of grow in the lowlands. So, and then by coincidence, or we met Darren Teo of Dewakan, and we talked about this recently, actually, with Darren. Neither of us, neither side can remember how we first met or who introduced us. But anyway, so we met Darren. He came up here, and like many chefs, you know, they're kind of walking around and putting all kinds of weeds in their mouth and kind of going, and you're kind of thinking, oh, please don't eat that. I don't know if it's edible or not. So we learned a lot from him on, you know, local herbs and local produce. So he was keen to take produce from us. And because we're such a small farm, we can kind of customize things for chefs. So leaves of a certain size, or, you know, it's an aubergine or a chayote or whatever, but they want a certain dimension, or they want a herb that's already flowered. Right. So that's how it started, really. It started with Darren, and, you know, all the chefs are kind of quite a close community in KL. So, you know, we were introduced to other people as well. So that's how it started. And then they would say, oh, could you try and grow this? So we would, you know, they'd bring seeds back from wherever, and we'd try and grow that. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. So, but it's been a kind of, I don't know, a good sort of 6 years or so.
Right.
I mean, starting with Darren, hasn't it?
Right. Yes.
And it's kind of grown from there.
Right. So you're basically an incubator in a way for them to just experiment, you know, and just the right size, you know, people were open to it. When did you guys decide to have the makan aspect of your business, the community lunches that you have now?
I think we started about 2 years after the farm got going. I think once the farm settled and we kind of knew what we were doing, we put a restaurant on it. I mean, it's kind of hard to do a farm-to-table restaurant if you didn't know how to farm. So, so it was quite important to know how to farm first, I think. Otherwise, you'd be lying, wouldn't you?
and I understand that, you know, because I went to Makan there, I understand that 95% of all the food, the greens you serve are grown on the farm, and all of it is soil grown. So where's the remaining 5% from? What are you talking about? I guess is the meats.
Olive.
Olive.
We can't grow olive in this country, or capers.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, the meats, the poultry comes from local organic farms nearby. At the moment, the red meat, the lamb and beef comes from Australia. But I think we also feel kind of very strongly about supporting other small businesses. So, for example, we serve figs that come from a very local farm, actually, in Kampung Jandabai. And, you know, we have a few fig trees for fun. But, you know, we're never going to grow them as well as somebody who is only growing figs. And his figs are beautiful. They're really, really delicious. So, you know, we buy our figs from him. That's one example. So, you know, it's kind of good to support other local suppliers, other local growers as well.
That's actually a really important point, because I think a lot of people who build farms, and we talk to an awful lot of them, who want to have their own farms like a retirement thing or sort of downshifting thing, tend to think of it as a sort of self-sufficient thing, you know, that they want to be self-sufficient in absolutely everything on their farm. We are not a farm like that. I mean, we almost take the opposite view, which is that it is better to support a vendor if you can do it than to try and do it yourself for everything.
Right.
For example, we buy our vermicompost from a worm farm an hour away, rather than making worm compost ourselves.
Right.
The reason is because you'll never be as good as them. Because, you know, that's their core business. And two, I mean, if you're really talking about sort of, you know, trying to have an organic industry in this country, and that obviously hopefully is what we're heading towards, you need to support the entire ecosystem, not just yourself. So it's really important to do that, to support your suppliers, to support... You know, I mean, exactly what the restaurants and the chefs are doing for us. I mean, they want to have fresher vegetables and edible flowers and so on and so forth. And so they support us. It's the same thing. I mean, because they support us, we can support other people and so on and so forth. That's right. How you grow an ecosystem over a period of time. And I think that's actually a really important thing that we've learned.
Right. And moving on, I'd like to talk about what it was like the last 2 years. I'm here with Pete Teo and Lee Seng An from A Little Farm The Hill. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Open for Business will reopen in a few moments. Powered by BossBully.com, Malaysia's first online company secretary.
Boyish 40-something millionaires. BFM 89.9.
Open for Business is powered by BossBully.com, Malaysia's first online company secretary.
Good morning, this is Frida Liu. If you've just joined us, it's Open for Business. I'm here with Pete Teo and Lee Seng An from Little Farm The Hill. Early on, we're just talking about how the farm started, what they're doing. And of course, we have to talk about what happened the last 2 years. We have to.
You know what?
And you know, what happened during the lockdowns? Because obviously restaurants were also not open, right? What did you do during this period?
In our case, it was really bad, of course, because we the restaurant side of the business couldn't open, mm-hmm. of course. But the farm side, unlike other farms, we supply to restaurants. so that our customers weren't open as well.
Right.
So we ended up doing a lot of deliveries, and that really sort of helped pull us through, really. I mean, a surprising amount of deliveries, actually.
I think, I mean, for us, we were very lucky in the sense that most of our bookings are through email. And we had already built up quite a good mailing list. So we had access to those former customers who had come up to the farm. So in that sense, when we started doing deliveries, we had those, you know, we had that list that we could reach out to. So I think that was very important. And we also kind of developed menus and food that we could pack and it could travel and people could heat up. So it wasn't a delivery in the sense that it arrived and you ate. It was kind of like you had to half prepare it yourself. So there was a lot of work went into that, into the packaging, how it would travel, you know, making it easy so that people could just kind of pop it in the oven,
right?
That sort of thing. And actually it turned out to be, it worked really well for us actually. And that really saved us. I mean, obviously it's nothing close to our income from business here, but it certainly kept us going.
Right. Did that actually, you know, spun into another business that you're going to continue, or that takes too much effort now that we're sort of opening up again?
No, we intend to carry on. I think we've sort of, for other reasons, we've sort of at this current moment sort of put a stop to it, the delivery business, because we simply shorthanded actually. But we certainly fully intend to start it up again, probably in about, I don't know, 1 or 2 months.
Right. Okay. You know, talent, that's another one, you know, finding and maintaining talent who's willing to move up there. What's your strategy?
Treat people well. I think that's a very main strategy. I think you have to respect the fact that talents have a life, have an ambition, have needs for financial as well as material needs. We try our best to be better, to treat people well. We have, for example, hospitalization insurance for all our workers, regardless of rank, actually. And that helps because, people need that. I mean, it's a farm. I mean, you do get hurt. We have accommodation here, and we take great care to make sure that the accommodation is extremely comfortable. They get Netflix. People get, that sort of free Wi-Fi, that sort of thing.
That's what the millennials need.
Right? Yeah. And we try and pay people well. I think that's ultimately the bottom line, right? I mean, all these things every employer try and do, but what we try and do more is to treat this whole thing of employment as more than just some sort of a money exchange for labor type equation. That we do try and run it like a family. We do try and run it where we take care of people.
Well, I suppose like a community probably.
Correct.
A better.
And so there is a sort of, aspects of human relationships where we sort of make sure that people get along. Mm-hmm. And we kind of start with this thing in the recruitment process where we hire based on personality.
Right.
We don't really just hire based on a skill set.
Right.
Because on the farm, really, everybody's got a mixed skill set and sometimes mixed roles here, actually. I mean, very few people have just got one specialist role.
Right.
So those skill sets can often be taught anyway. But what you want are people who can settle into this environment, get along, and are people that we can get along. And that's really, really important. And I think we've done quite well so far. So, yeah, so it's a nice little community up here right now.
I think the personality thing is particularly kind of acute. Maybe I can't think of the right word, but it's kind of important up here because everybody lives on site. Right. So they only go home on their day off. So, it's not like you're working your 8 hours and then you can go home and, your 8 hours, you go back to your staff quarters and it's the same.
I see your face again.
Right. So that's very important. And I think, as Pete says, I think we've been, pretty successful actually. In the last two, 3 years in building that community. And I think that, that showed itself in the pandemic. We kept everybody. But what happened was we sat them all down. They all agreed to take a pay cut, actually, and were extremely supportive. And the local staff, the local Malaysian staff, actually took a bigger pay cut than the foreign staff, because right. Obviously the foreigners are supporting families back home who are obviously all, in financial difficulty as well. So that was very heartening. And actually, since we've reopened, as of this month, we've kind of managed to pay everybody back what we had deducted. So that was very heartening that they kind of willingly agreed to do that. And obviously, through the pandemic, everybody stayed up here. Right. Nobody could go home, back to their families or whatever. So, so that was good. It kind of built, in a way, day to day, our lives didn't change very much at all because, the farm still has to carry on. You still have to kind of look after it and everything. We had very elaborate staff lunches because there was nothing else to be doing.
Experimenting. And, I think it's honest conversations, right, with what's happening, and people do understand that when you have these honest conversations. So right now you guys have community lunches on Sundays where it's open to all. So are you planning to increase the number of days?
Yeah, I think, we started out with the what we call communal lunch, which is more like a normal restaurant, right? Where everybody can sort of book and there are like different tables with different guests on it, as opposed to a private lunch. So we started that communal lunch, like I think it was once a month, about I don't know, 4 years ago, I think. And then twice a month, and then four times a month, every Sunday. And from this month onwards, actually, we are expanding that again because of our demand to Saturday and Sunday, Saturday and Sunday. So it basically becomes a weekend communal lunch every week.
Right. So there's a demand, and you see consumers enjoying that right now. I read in Tatler that you also plan to hold art spaces and events at the place over the next 12 months. And you also dream of hosting a performing arts residency in 2 years. So is everything on track?
I mean, if you came now, we have a building sort of in mid-construction, and that's an apartment upstairs and a recording studio downstairs. And that's really the center of the art space, the arts residency program that we've will eventually do. And also we'll build a stage, a small stage,
right?
So that performers can perform and so on. So I think the sort of connection between sort of growing food, serving food, and sort of building that community around artists is really exciting to us. And I think I can't wait to do that. I mean, that would be so fun. And also, and you know, and quite good to give back to the city something.
Right, right. I think it's nice as well to get away from the city and then know that you're going to have your food, you're going to be entertained and, you know, and have some rest as well. Right. So the other work, Lisa's an architect, you as your musician, filmmaker, is that still ongoing or that has taken a back seat?
Well, the architect bit, I suppose, you know, it's that classic thing that quite often people of my parents' kind of generation go, oh, what a waste. Like, you know, you studied all that time and now you're cooking. You know what I mean, right?
Yes.
But the thing is, I mean, yes, obviously I'm still, you know, all the buildings that are on site, I'm still working on and I design. But, you know, all those skills in terms of design and design of spaces and all that, I still very much use in the work now on the farm. So, but yes, in terms of practicing as an architect for outside clients, no, I don't do that anymore.
Right. And now Pete's got your stage.
Yes.
I was worse. Of course, I went to law school, right? And so from law school, you then became...
So you were a lost cause ages ago.
sort of performing monkey somewhere and then now become a farmer. I mean, it's like talking about a descent, right? So I think my parents are very ashamed of me. I still accept gigs, of course, you know, acting gigs especially because they are shorter. Directing and producing is a bit harder to accept. I got to think about it very hard because those are like long-term 1 to 2 year commitments.
Right.
And with the amount of stuff that is like happening on a farm, it's very hard to commit to long-term projects for me, or at least at the moment. Mm. Yeah, so that's really about it. I mean, I still do acting. So recently I've just had one from Tan Chui Mui just released and won an award in Shanghai and so on. So those gigs I will still do. It's the longer term things that I tend to sort of now say, look, you know, maybe we'll wait for those.
Right. Well, I look forward to visiting A Little Farm on the Hill again. And, you know, looking forward to all the developments that's going to be happening. I've been speaking to Pete Teo and Lisa Ngan from Little Farm on the Hill. You've been listening to Open for Business, BFM 89.9.
Are you open for business? Register your company with BossBully.com, Malaysia's first online company secretary.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.